Okay, guys. So guys, the last thing we talked about was Shechirat Rishut, which again was very important. The reason I thought it was very important for you to understand Shechirat Rishut is to understand how different Erevin is from what you call Erevin, which is mostly a Rishuyo question, right? The issue of Erev, which is both the food component, which we haven't even talked about the food, and the Shechirat Rishut, that's all within the Erevin question. And again, I mentioned to you, right, that there were some who thought that Emin Domain is good. There were people who thought that it's, right? right? And Rav Schechter, basically, Rav Schechter suggests using Emin Domain. He said Rav Schechter did not endorse it. Now, there are also, right, technical issues that it might cause Ava. You know, there are all types of interesting shilas that he raises. Just so you know, this is like your type of shila, right? Which is, what about a community that has an Erev and has a foreign embassy inside of the Erev? Right?
Did you?
Okay. So,
No. You were saying because right. They can't actually take it.
So the Netivot.
What I'm saying is that there's no one who's allowed to enter.
So the Netivot Shabbat. Therefore, indeed, says that you can't go into it, but it doesn't necessarily possible the rest of it, depending on whether it is fenced in. Right? If it's fenced in, then you can't go into it, but it is separated off. But let's say the property. Right. Let's say there was a property around it that was owned by the foreign government, right? That was under the auspices of the foreign government, but and it didn't have a fence. Then it would asher the entire Erev, because the entire Erev would be nifras l'makom asher la, right? Would be broken into would be opened into an asher place. Now, very interesting, right? Well, so right, Jachter says that he talked to Rabbi Willie, because this was a problem, because the Libyan embassy of all places was in Englewood. I don't understand why Englewood is like in Englewood. I don't really understand why. I'm not.
What is Englewood? What is Englewood?
Englewood is like a upper class Jewish community out next to Teaneck.
Like very very Jewish.
Very very Jewish.
Oh okay.
Like very very Jewish, right outside Manhattan.
Yeah, like 15.
A consulate, maybe. I don't know. I find consulate, whatever. The point is, legally, it doesn't matter. And Ray Willick said that his problem is that the Russian ambassador's residence is within the Riverdale Erev, or at least it was at some point. So Ray Willick told him that he asked Professor Lewis Henkin, the son of the posek of Yosef Elio Henkin, who's an expert in international law. And he claimed that foreign embassies are not technically defined as foreign territory. That under normal circumstances, local authorities grant the embassies a great deal of autonomy as a courtesy, so police would not usually enter a foreign embassy. But in a case of an emergency, like a fire, local officials do enter the embassy, even when the foreign representatives protest, right? And therefore, Michael Wilds confirmed this. And if that's the case, then he thinks technically it would work. But in Manhattan, the Machon Lahara, who's in charge of the Manhattan Erev, excludes the United Nations from the Erev, from the Shechirat Rishut. So I thought that was just a very fun... What? Right, from the Erev. Right, the people who are in charge of the Manhattan Erev Okay, right, so that was just some interesting nafkaminas. Of this. Now but that's not the classic part of the Erev. What is the Erev itself? What is the Erev? The food, very good. Is that everybody contributes food to the Erev, and then you keep it in a house. Right? Now this is a little bit complicated because now in Halacha, in Masechet Erev, there's a lot of fascinating discussions about this of, well, if not everyone's doing it, can you be mezaket to other people? And if you're mezaket, can you mezaket through your wife? Can you mezaket through your kids? Do they have a yad? Do they not have a yad? All types of very fascinating kinyanim issues. But be'ikaron, what the Erev is, is the Now again, technically, if you have an Erev opening of the Shita Mevaot, you bidyavad would be yotze without both. But lechatchila, we tell you you're supposed to have both. Right, both the Erev Chatzeret and the Shita of Mavot, partially so that people know that the laws of carrying exist. Right, and part of that is why the minhag developed to put it in the shul, even though, halachically, this is extremely problematic because the shul is not actually a place where anybody lives, but nevertheless... But nevertheless,
learning in your Gemara Shiur,
correct. But nevertheless, the minhag is to put it in shul. But admittedly, you should just know that in Pesach, and again, since it's our last halacha shiur in my last set, we're gonna have to run through things a little bit. But that you should know that there is there's tension about this. I'll just if you want a little bit more on the Sirat Rishut in democracy, right? We talked about some of it, but Ray Jachir is a nice collection of other poskim. He notes that the Satmar Rav was okay with doing it in democracy. Eliashiv thought that you might not be able to do it at all. You might not be able to do a community-wide Eruv in a democracy because of the problem of Sirat Rishut, that you might actually have to rent from each person. But again, the majority, however, Rabbi Bezalel Frank thinks that democracy is better, right? It's better because it's a government which is of the people, by the people, and for the people, and therefore the person that you voted in. Now, but what would be the nafkamin of saying such a thing? If you really believe that, you might have to do it every election. Right, because the whole point is if you think that person was now voted in, so it represents you. So, and again, but we noted all types of interesting shita. The Tikvat Zacharia, which I told you was the tshuva that defended the Erev in St. Louis, suggests that maybe it's because the government has the right to inspect things. That gives them enough. Again, Schechter doesn't like this, and Ray Willig doesn't love it. Right, and again, right, what I know from what I've heard from Rav Schechter is that you do it, that you just don't do it in the, right, for to go into their houses. Apparently in England, he quotes that Rav Tzvi Lieberman told him that in Edgware, which is one of the big Jewish communities, they did two Sirat Rishut, one for the local government, and the other for was a representative of the Queen, right, because again, you have all these... and then Ray Jachter just notes technically that you have to make sure not to let it run out, right? You do a skirt or should and you say for 5 years, then you forget, right? You know, it's the way like people thought that Hong Kong would never be returned to China. What's 99 years, right? And then it was, right? You can't do that with a skirt or should, right? You can't say for 5 years and then. Right, and again, there's a machloka. There are some who think you have to do it when there's when the government official from who you rent it is, goes leaves office, right? And okay. I just love the name of some of his articles. He's written a lot over the last years on this, but Muammar Gaddafi and the Englewood era. I love the name of an article like that. Great. So the way it works is that we're mizake, right? Which means we acquire it on your behalf. No, the person who is making the era, it picks up the food on behalf of everybody. He does it on behalf of everybody. That's what he does. Yes. Yes. We pick it up, but we actually are mocking it to you. Admittedly, it creates a little bit of a problem. Okay. I mean, there's discussions about this, but fundamentally, yes. So we talked about, again, we have not talked about everything in Erevin, but we talked a little bit about Rishuyo. We talked a little bit about Sirat Rishut. Again, there's the food requirements. I think it's worth talking a little bit about the Lehi Kara issue, okay? So in classic halacha, so again, if you have, remember, our Erevin are some combination of a Erev Chatzerot and a Shituf Mavot. So Chatzer is the courtyard. Right, so again, the way they're, let's see if I can get a picture. Chatzerot, it's Kufat HaTalmud. Chatzerot umivot. Let's see. Pictures? Any pictures? Let's see. I have it home, but let's see. Pictures?
You can draw on the board if you want, right?
I mean, it's really not so complicated. It's not so complicated. Shituf Mevoot. I mean, very, very simply, right? This is what it looks like, right? It's really not so complicated, right? But the way things were set up, where you had a house, right? Let's say you would have houses that would open into a chatzer, right?
Looks like Spanish or Italian style, like how they have those communal courtyards still.
Right.
And this is a little bit before that, Rudy.
Right. And then, right, so a mavui satum, right, would be like this, right, where you have these chatzerot, and then they open into an alleyway, right, this is satum, it has three walls, and then this is the Rishud HaRabim, right, and then you could have multiple of these opening into the Rishud HaRabim, right, a mavui, well, you could have as many as you want opening into it. It depends on how big the city is, right? And then a mavui, right? So this is a mavui satum, which is three walls. But you could also have a mavui that is mafulash, where there isn't this wall, right? Then it, right? So what you need is at the entrance here, right? You need either a lechi, which is a side bar, or a kora, which is a top bar, okay? Right, which is a top bar. What? At the entrance, right? Meaning if you did it not at the entrance, then anything past it is usher. Okay? Then anything past it is usher. That is by, what?
That means
Shituf Mivavot. Right? Now, by a Erev Chatzerot, you need, right, you need l'chayayim. The problem is that the Ramah writes that nowadays, right, what's the problem? Is that our cities are not set up exactly like theirs, right? And that's why we tend to be very machmir. Now, the easiest way, if you want to be, right, the easiest way that you could really, really deal with it is, is if it's Shur HaPetach, right? Now, Shur HaPetach will solve it because Shur HaPetach is, right, is better. Now, I will point out that things get a little bit complicated because technically, is the sidebar of a Shur HaPetach, because Shur HaPetach is what? It's two on the side and then one on top. So it looks like two lechis and a kara, but it's not, right? It's a tzuret petach. What? No, it has different standards. But again, this is not always true, right? Right? Technically, that's called a kana mikan, v'kana al gabeyan. That's how the Gemara describes it. Most Erevin try to use as much tzuret petach as they can, right? But like, for example, there are parts of the Efrat Eruv where they only have a lechi. Side post. Everything. No, Shur HaPetach solves a lot more. What? No, it's not as good as a wall. That comes back to what some of the stuff we talked about. Ati Rav Avadli Mechitzta. In some, yes. In many of the modern Erevin that... What? Right. Now, again, because of this, right, what most Erevin do, right, so again, because of the complexity that our Rishuyot right? Our Rishit are not really Chater, not really Mivoot. Now, this is not necessarily clear. For example, Rosh Zalman makes the argument that it's not really about Chatzer and Mavui. It's about Mavui is that which opens into Rishut HaRabim, and Chatzer, which is two steps removed from it. So he says, let's say you could have a Mavui opening to a Mavui. Right? So this is what you have in Toronto, in Thornhill. Right? So it happened to me that I didn't quite understand it until I lived in it. Right, but I can see if I can show you this. Google Maps, let's do. Tan Green Circle, Thornhill, Vaughan. Here, perfect, look at this. Amazing, okay? Okay, so if you look here, you'll see that here's the shul, okay? Right here, here's the bayit, okay? So here, Toronto is made up of these major streets going right north-south and going east-west, okay? So Clark is one of those major streets, right? Now, you see this whole gray here? Right? This is a wall, okay? This is a wall because Thornhill was built to be easy to drive and hard to walk, right?
It's not good. It keeps out basically people who can't afford a car. It's very bad for walkability.
Other way around. Easy to walk, hard to drive. There we go. So it would be good on Shabbos. It was made by a from Jew, right? The main developer was a from Jew. So if you come up here, so you look, that this is the other main street, right? So this is the north-south street, right? So this is Bathurst. All Jews in Toronto live along Bathurst Bay. 90% of Jews in Toronto for hundreds of miles live along Bathurst. Now, Bathurst goes for, I think, 83 miles, something like that. Okay, so this is a main street. Let's imagine for the moment Rishut HaRabim, but I'm not saying that halachically. Okay, but let's imagine. This is the main street, okay, and this is a main street, Clark. Now this is a wall, okay? This is a wall, and this is a wall. There's one entrance in at a diagonal here, but then you have this circle, right, which opens up into Spring Gate, and this is a wall, right? Then you have this one street, which has a little walking path out of it. Otherwise, it opens into this.
That's an opening.
Yes, but you can have a small opening, right? Less than 10 amo. It's a tiny little walking path, right? And then you have this circle and this circle, and all of them open into Atkinson, which is a mid-level street, and then Atkinson feeds into Clark, which is a bigger level street.
So the entrance is at Atkinson and
another right?
One?
So this type of thing, again, leaving aside the formal halakhic question, is Clark or Bathurst a Rishut HaRabim? The point is that you can have, the Mavui itself, technically it's a Mavui Kemen Chet, which Gemara talks about, right? A Mavui in the shape of a Chet. This is not a new phenomenon. Right? So, like, Fay Court there is a Mavui Satum, right? It's literally, right? And then it's three Mavui Kiminchets and one Mavui Satum, opening him into another Mavui Satum, right? Which opens into Atkinson, which opens into Clark, which opens it, right? So, what? Right. So, it happens to be that most Erevin. Because of this complexity, where the Ramah says you should be machmir and use only Tzurda Petach, mostly when possible, we only use Tzurda Petach. Now, again, sometimes people refer to the side of a Tzurda Petach as a Lechi. It is not really true. Halachically, formally, that's not what it is. A Lechi is a sidebar that by itself permits a Mavui. Right? But often when you're building an Erev, they will call the sidebar a Lechi. They don't mean that. They mean it's a Kaneh. Right? It's part of the Tzurda Petach, a Kaneh, a Kaneh, a Kaneh al Gabeya. Okay? They have different qualifications, correct. Right? Well, it's also placement. Right? So one of the major differences to this is that what is the definition of a Tzurda Petach? Kana mikan, vikana mikan, vikana al gabehen. Right? That the kana has to be on top of the side post. Right? What is the problem? So So, first of all, is that true in a lot of these? Is it right on top? No. What do they use? Good asik and good achit. You're allowed to, right? The problem is that what do you need to make sure? No. Think about what people build a Tzura Petach on a utility pole, right? So the wire's all the way at the top, right? Now, can you use the wire, can you use the actual wood part of the wire for it as the kane, right? Like the wood pole, can you use that? No, because it's attached to the side. That's not al gabehen, right? So what we do instead is we attach a stick on the bottom and use good achit and good asik to make it that's on top at, you know, 20 feet above.
Why can't you use the sticks on the side?
Because it's attached to the side. No, it's al gabehen. Kanavik kana al gabehen. If it's minat sad, it's puzzle. It's invalid.
So
this is the problem with Erev, and this is why I don't want to learn Erev in here, right? Is because I told Ray Ginsburg, by time, the concepts are great in Erev, but it takes so long to visualize what you're doing. You'll spend all your time visualizing, you won't have time to do skills, right? Like other skills. You'll visualize very nicely, but. What? Erev is all visualizing, because every sort of petach minatzad, and a wall, and an angle, and a this. A lot. A lot. And if you're not a visual thinker, it's really bad. Wait one second. So now what's the problem? So if the electric wire, the phone wire, whatever, is attached to the side of the pole, it can't be used. Right?
Because
the definition of a Tzura Petah is sidebar, and the top on top. Correct. It cannot be attached to the side. It has to be on top. There's a machloket about tachuv. Tachuv is when it goes through.
Oh, like
you do with the fishing wire.
Which is a machloket of tachuv, right? And some posts can rely on tachuv and some do not. But definitely the natsad doesn't work. Okay? So now, one second. So what they do is they put a sidebar. Then there's happens to be machloket of poskim. What does it mean to be above? And there's two possibilities. One is, no, eyeball it. Or plumb line. Meaning, does it have to look like it's above by the human eye? Or does it need plumb line?
Yeah, that was
correct. And that's a machloket poskim. Yeah. Okay, good. So what are we getting there? We're getting there. We'll get through whatever we can. Now, how many lechis do you have to put on? Right? So, well, what do you mean two? Two on what?
One on side. Or maybe one on side, one
on top. On each pole? Or on each side of the Eruv? That's a big difference. I have a mile worth, I have one wall of Tzura Petach. It goes a mile long. Do I need a lechi on every single pole? A kane? Right? There are some who say that it's fine as long as it's on the first and last pole. Right? Right? Bechofer, who wrote a very important book on the contemporary Eruv, says no. No, because what's going to happen, right? First of all, it looks wrong, right? Right, it also needs to look right. It needs to, that you don't want people to think that a Tzura Petach Menatzad is good, right? And here it's going to look like it's Menatzad. Now, he doesn't quote anybody for this, right? But Rav Moshe Feinstein does not require this, and right, Rabbi Eider didn't require this, and Rav Yitzchak Frank does not require it. What about when they're not straight? So it's still fine, right? It has to be, right? So the Rambam says, right, even if it's 100 amot wide, is mutter. Right, so we can just pretend the middle poles don't exist. So that's... no, not per se. I mean, yes, but you can see it. That's true. But let's talk a little bit about Turbet, okay? Right, again. So most Erevin that are built on the shores of Beth, let's talk a little bit about that. So again, what did I say? The Gemara calls it Kana Al Gabeya. So... again, the Gemara in Erevin Yod Aleph has a machloket of Nachman and of Sheshet, whether the vertical poles, the kaneh, have to reach the horizontal pole. We paskin, they don't. They just have to be 10 tvachim high as long as they're directly beneath based on gudachit, gudasik, okay? Right? Gudasik, really. That it stretches up. Again, that's a machloket in the Gemara, but we paskin that way, la halacha.
Wait, you're saying the students have to touch the poles?
That's what I just said. It has to be directly under it. And then I said you have a machloket whether you use eyesight or plumb line. So the Rav, Rav Moshe Feinstein, both felt that it goes by one's eyes, right? And that is the position of Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg or Dalia Dov Schwartz. But Rav Yitzchak Leibes, Rav Bleich, Rav Chaim Cohen, Rav Moshe Heinemann, Rav Schechter, Rav Willig, all think you have to use plumb line, meaning you actually have to measure it. In order for it to work. And Ray Jaster says that you can talk to Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman said, L'chadchila you should use plumb line, but if necessary, you can get away with using eyesight. Plumb line is anything that measures it. Okay? The direct measurement. Right? That's all. Is that it's directly underneath by measuring. Rav Jachter has a very nice series in Erevin in general. He said that he asked a lot of older Rabbanim who served as rabbis in Europe to figure out what the minhag had been there. And he said that he heard from David Lifshitz, who was the Rav in Suvalk, that they used a plumb line in Suvalk. Whereas Rephaim Ushri, right, they should have been, right, the Shutmi Mamakim, the Rav of the Kavno Ghetto, says that they used eyesight. Now, within the eyesight approach, then, you know, people dispute about exactly, right, is it an informed estimate or a gross estimate? Okay. Right, so you'll see different Erevin that do different things about that. Then I said that one of the problems, I said it, but we'll run through this a little again. Now, Tachov is an interesting machloket, right, where it goes through, right? It's drilled through. So, Churda Petach Menatzad, we said, is puzzle. That's more an Erevin Yod Aleph. So why do you think there's a machloket about Tachov? So some poskim are machmir because they say that going through is no different than being attached to the side, right? The Prima Gadim had a suffix about this. However, the Aruch HaShulchan from Shlomo Kluger and Bezach Frank said, Tachov is fine. Why? No. Because you just pretend that the top is not there. It's over part of the pole, right? It's over part of the pole, and then you imagine that the tar of the pole on top of it doesn't exist. Right, meaning, and the Chazon Ish, right, his proof was very simple. What if I took a pole, and then I put the kane on top of it, right, and then I put another pole for some reason on top? Everyone would theoretically agree that that's fine, right? I didn't postle it. So by that argument, he says Tachuk should is Asura. On the other hand, why would, so that seems like a very good Svara. So why do some people say Tachuk is not good? Because Tzur Petach is supposed to look like a doorway, right? And that doesn't look like a doorway. Like, maybe formally you could look at it, you could pretend that part of it doesn't exist, but it doesn't look like a doorway, right? Lo kacha. This continues to be a machloket, right? This is not like some theoretical, some Erevin rely, and some don't. Again, if you ever want, like, someone who really writes about practical stuff, like how are Erevin built, you can either go to Rabbi Bechover's book, right, or Rabbi Jasher's articles online, or in his books, right? They will tell you what's going on in America. Yeah. Yeah, like if you look on the website of the Toronto Arab, they have an excellent history of the Arab and the sheet that they rely on. And certain Arab are better than others, but like Toronto Arab is an excellent website where it goes through all the sheet out. I mean, you can look. Where do you live? Baltimore proper, right? Not Silver Spring. Baltimore Arab. Let's see. The Baltimore Arab does not... Oh, wait. Website address. Arov.com, Arov of Baltimore. Info has... No. Does not have a halachic description. No, I'm sorry. So some communities do. Again, Toronto, they do have it. But in America, there's a machloket. So he said, Reb David Feinstein told him that you shouldn't use it. Reb Shlomo Zalman says you can. Reb Amital told Rav Jachta in Israel, apparently they're makel. I don't know if this is still true, but at some point it were. In America, some of the people who made a lot of Erevin were Reb Eider, who's a Talmud Reb Moshe Feinstein, and Reb Heineman from Baltimore. They do not rely on Tachlov. The Erevin used by Reb Shechter Awilig do rely on Tachlov. So according to him, the Tinek Erev relies on Tachlov. And he said that Rai Taubis, who's the administrator of the Tinek Erev, said that he doesn't know how you could, in a big Erev, really not rely on Tachlov. Now, the Shulchan Aruch, possibly like the Gemara and Erev and Yud Aleph, that the vertical poles, right, the Kana Mikan, in theory, have to be strong enough to hold a door made of straw. But the one on top does not. Right, it can even be made of gemi, of a reed. However, some hold Mishabura holds two shitot about whether it's allowed to be so flimsy that it sways in the wind. Right, right. Based on the normal rule that a machitza, in order to be counted as a machitza, has to be strong enough to withstand a ruach mitsuya, right, a normal wind. Now, that definitely applies to these sidebars, but what about the top? Right, so that is a machloket. The second svara to posel it is that it's not the way doors are made. And this is a svara that will come up a lot in Torah Petach, is that one of the svaras in the Gemara seems to be asked to be the way it's made. Aruch HaSholchon was mekel, Chazanish is machmir. What about zigzagging wires? Right, there's a lot of details in Erevin. What about zigzagging wires? Right, which happens because they have to go around trees and things like that. Right, because it can't. So it can't. Right, so you'll go around. Right, but then it's going like. Right, and right, telephone balls are not necessarily in a straight line. Is that okay? So some say it depends on the same machloket we said before. Right? No, on the whether the top one, how strong it has to be. Is it midin mechitza or not? If it's mechitza, it should be normal. If it's just like symbolic, it'd be more mekel. He said, right, Eider and Reinemann are machmir. They want the side poles to be completely straight because it has to look like a doorway. Ray Willig claims that a minor zigzag is possible. And his proof is that the Gemara gives an example of a Shura Petach is grapevines. And grapevines are not completely straight. Similarly, Shulchan Aruch uses the example of a reed. And reeds are not usually completely straight, which shows you don't need it to be completely straight. Within the people who say it doesn't have to be completely straight, the question is, okay, how much... Exactly. So the Rav apparently held up to 22 degrees. Ray Willig is much more machmir. The Rav Meir Arik paskin that it can't, the wire can't move more than three tvachim in any direction. And he quotes Rav Yitzchak Frankel, says that was the opinion of Moshe Feinstein as well. Now, again, this is not theoretical. Actual Erevin. Need to rely on this, right? These are all, so again, just to summarize, because we didn't get through everything, but what you have to remember is that a community Erev has a lot of aspects to it. Again, right? So just to We didn't talk about everything, but talk about it. One is the definition of Rishuta. We talked a bit about what makes something not a Rishuta Rabim. We didn't really get the chance to talk about Rishuta Yachid. But we talked a bit about Rishuta Rabim. So first you need to make sure it's not a Rishuta Rabim. Then you need to figure out, well, how you're going to be matir it. Right? And we talked about, yes, there's Lechi Kara, but that's not really what's being used. Usually it's Shurah Petach. Then you need to find the Shurah Petach. And then, as we said, even in cases where there's literally no wall problem at all, right, there's still the problem of Erevin, so then you need to share the food. Again, we didn't get into the exact how much food and how do we do it, but suffice it to say, that's the easy part of this whole thing, even though not really, because Mekra Adin, it's supposed to be in a house, and we put it in shul. Just know that that's what the post can do, even though it's really not clear, la halacha, that you're allowed to do that, because it's not where somebody lives.
In Efrat, what do they do?
Where is it? The food? Which shul? I think it's the Merkazi and Rimon. I don't know. I assume. I'm not sure. By the way, you should know, though, that that food is actually owned by everybody. This is not a... Correct. So, it's in the shul. So, for example, Ray Schwartz told me that once someone in his shul came to him and had no food, right, on Shabbos, and he said, well, go to the shul. There's a box of matzah sitting there. It's yours. Right, everybody owns it.
If someone finishes eating it, there's that problem.
If they finish eating it, it'll be really a problem. Yes, 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 yes. Very good. By the next Shabbos. That Shabbos is already mutter,
okay.
Right? But by the next Shabbos, that would be a problem.
The next Shabbos?
Yeah, but he would have to do another one. Correct. If the person ate, there wasn't enough food, you'd have to do it. And again, there's a whole type of discussion, how much food do you put? We didn't get a chance to, but suffice it to say, there's discussion, right? You have to know their dinim and how much food there has to be.
Work for Eric being kosher? Because I know that's
okay, good. Good, so we didn't even get into that. So I'm just going to throw out some other issues. Again, we talked about Skirut. Sure, there's a whole bunch of other issues that have to be getting. We dealt in some of the complexity of Shurah Petach. But yeah, there are other questions such as how often you have to check it. When can you rely on Chazakah? Can you rely on Chazakah if it's stormy? And therefore you have reason to believe that it might have fallen. Right? And so different places do different things. Some places check every week. Some places don't check every week. Some places check every week at certain times of year.
New York, I'm pretty sure they check.
Right? So, for example, they don't have an Erev right now in Edmonton, but when my cousin was a rabbi in Edmonton, he was trying to get an Erev belt, but one of the problems was that for like 9 months a year, it's negative 40, right? And it's terrible storms, so there's not even a chazaka, right? And it's not just that. There are no electric wires. There are no above-ground electric wires. It's too cold. Everything's underground, so you'd have to build the whole thing from scratch, right? Which is not easy, right? I actually talked to him. I actually consulted for him with a firm guy who owns a surveillance company, like a company that does surveillance of gas pipes in using drones, of how much it would cost. And the person thought he could like the firm guy who was the CEO. I talked to him. He thought it for like $3,000 he could set up a system of drones that would check the air of on a regular basis. I don't think it ever came to fruition, but I was like, this is the future, is a drone.
Drones checking Arabs.
Can you rely on
them? Why not?
Well, what do they tell you? Are you watching
videos through them, or they're...
So first of all, right, an easy way is you could just have it, yeah, you forget AI. Before you even get to AI, you could have someone literally sitting there and just flying the drones around. What? Which is definitely fine in this case. I don't know why it wouldn't be fine. You just have to, like, know how to use it and make sure that you actually catch everyone. But what's the big deal? Correct. That, I assure you that within a few years, the Shadow is not going to be a person checking the drones. It's going to be AI, right? AI... It's drones with AI, 100%. That's going to be the next Shiloh. But yeah, different Arab in real life. Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. Of all things AI could do, I'm happy for it to take over Arab checking, right? Like, big deal, right? Like, it would do a good job. And if you're machmer on plumb line, right? It could do it much better than we can, right? It could measure. Forget it, right? It could measure the precision every week. It could do it every day. I mean, like, in Efrat, we don't have to do anything. We have drones flying around for security anyways. As part of security, just add something to it. They're always circling to make sure no one's at the walls. Just program an extra thing. They could check it every day. They could check it on Shabbos, right? Right? Bechal is going around anyways. Arab down! You have to distinguish it from the terrorist in the Yeshuv one. It's a great panic.
Drop everything right now.
Right, and the question is, which is worse, right? The person who's pushing their kids in the stroller, right? Which one would they rather hear? I don't even know, you know? Like, you know, the people in Efrat who are carrying their guns. Right, so this is a big question, is what do you do? And there's a big discussion in Post Game, which we did not get into at all, but there's an excellent article written many years ago at this point by Rabbi Schwartz on the RGJ Journal of what do you do when an eruv falls down on Shabbat? Do you have to tell people, right, or not, or do you let them stay in the dark? Right, so these are all types of issues we haven't gotten into, but these are other complexities. There's a million complexities about eruv, and we only touched the surface. But now at least you understand a little bit of why this is so complex. Again, I didn't give you the misudar, here's every halacha. I wanted you to sort of understand, have a conversation with Erevin because you want to do it. This is at least an introduction. This is why, right, Erevin are very, very complicated. Okay.